So that's what I'm talking about. The Fibonacci series of numbers is an algorithmic organizing principle in the composition of figurative painting, or realist painting, that is. And you'll see some of these numbers coming up, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So one of the aspects of starting any kind of painting or any kind of artwork is the design and composition of it, and trying to find some sort of unity out of the parts so that the whole has a relationship to it. You start off with anything as a continuum from too much variety, so you end up with things that look accidental, chaos. And at the other end of that, if you order things too much, you can end up with monotony. So it's kind of like a jungle to garden kind of concept. So you can have a garden that's very, very orderly, but maybe not very interesting to look at. Or you can have so much variety, you're back to the jungle again. There's lots of elements in design, from line, shape, value, color, texture, and so on, to order. What I'm talking about is proportional relationships that structure the invisible plan of the painting. So this is what you start off with. Nothing. So like a blank rectangle. So what are you going to do with that is the point. So it's rather like the unifying grid systems employed by the art director in a magazine layout, where you can use Fibonacci numbers or some other system of organization, but it's got to be a geometric grid on which a variety of types of content can be organized. The grid itself then gives coherency between each double page layout and the whole magazine, and an agreement between the parts and the whole, or as you might say, a good gestalt. So in this way, unity and order emerge from complexity and disorder. So the canvas, normally a rectangle, invites a system of interior proportioning that can provide a unifying invisible grid to guide the arrangement of the subject matter and produce visual coherency. And in choosing a compositional system, and there are more than one, of course, with an algorithm in this case based upon the Fibonacci series, or you might say Fibonacci series, an artist can divide the canvas into elegant and visually harmonious self-referential areas. Go on after that. Well, it's a repeating structure at which the primary verticals, horizontals, and key focal elements can be placed in the piece. So the Fibonacci summation series yields a golden ratio by dividing a preceding number into the following number, becoming more accurate to that the higher you go in the sequence. And so the golden ratio is a proportional relationship between 1 and 1.618, and expressed as phi, or the 21st letter of the Greek alphabet. So if you look at the first set of numbers on the top, you can see that 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, 144, and 233 are all adding the preceding number to it. The other set in orange is the root of the golden section 1.618, or 1.272, so that's yielding the 70, 113, and 183. And I bring that up because one of the artists I'm talking about utilizes the root phi as a compositional structure. So you can start the Fibonacci sequence with any number, and so, for example, 10 by 1.618, 16, add the previous two numbers, 10 and 16, 26, 42, 68, etc. Or you can start with a number and divide. So of course, if you're starting out with a canvas where you're not concerned so much about the proportional shape of the canvas itself, when you're going to make that a golden section rectangle, whatever it is, you can simply take whatever the sides are and divide. And so you can come up with an interior proportioning system that still is self-referential.
It's kind of like 1.2 one more time.
I'm sorry?
The 1.2 on the lower left, what was that?
That's the root of the golden section 1.618.
The square root?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Okay. You've got a calculator, stick in 1.618 and press the loop sign. That's what you're going to get.
Well, 12 squared is 144, and I don't think you're going to have to end up to the 6, but...
He's right.
It's a cubic root.
The cubic root?
It's a cubic root, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go. The Cubusier's modulus, starting at 226 and dividing by 1.618 successively, yields the 140 and 86, and then half of that, the 113, yields is 70 and 43. And you can see all those numbers portrayed below based on a figure with an upstretched arm. And here it is with the 1.618 ratios to 1. So again, that's a modular proportioning system for architecture specifically. Here's an artist I've studied for a long time. His name's Fairfield Porter. He was a realist in the age of abstraction, like in the 50s through the 70s. Wrote as an art critic for Art News, and probably has often been called one of the most underrated painters of that period. So here he is, starting out with a blank canvas again. And so if we did a sketch, he was fortunate enough to have a family with some money, so they had an island off the coast of Maine, Great Spruce-Head Island, and we're looking out from the house on there to the islands off. And so if we sketch that, where do we put everything? In this case, he decided to create two 1.618 rectangles, or golden section rectangles, with a division of, you can see the 97 at the bottom, against the 157, and then another one on top of that, placing the distant islands on the contiguous line between the two. The sun at the top, this piece is called Yellow Sunrise, is placed the same distance from the left-hand edge, and then all of the other relationships accordingly. If you want to get enthusiastic about looking at all those measurements, you can do something like this, but it's probably a little bit too much. Here's another one, house with three chimneys, where you can see the top side. This is a near square, not quite a square. It's divided up into 162. So we're getting 162 for the total length. And the same proportions then are being carried out on the vertical side. And then the other relationship there creates a square from that. So we're using golden section rectangles and squares together. And of course, as you probably know, if you take a square out of the golden section rectangle, you leave another golden section rectangle ad infinitum. This is a slightly different version of the same thing, or it's the same proportions, but what's interesting is the three chimneys, which is what it's called, are placed at those points. They all have the same relationships in terms of squares and distancing from each other or repeating the measures. So, for example, from the left-hand edge to the lit side of the left-hand chimney is the same as from the middle chimney to the right-hand one, and so on and so on. And these are some other forms from the same artist. So this is a very simple division of space. This is a square canvas landscape. So when you're starting with a landscape, where do you put your horizon line? So that's a typical, you know, what's the primary horizontal division, and so of course that is the horizon line, assuming nothing else is there. So this is being placed at that same Fibonacci ratio or golden section ratio from top to bottom, and then the dark shadow side of the house is placed on the vertical, which is also then the same proportions from on the vertical side, or at least the horizontal edge. Here's another landscape out to those same islands from a different viewpoint. And you can see here we've got three sets of golden section rectangles on the top and squares underneath. And dividing that there, where the predominant fir trees are, the dark fir trees in the foreground, that little area in the second vertical over from the left is the, what they call the eye of the painting. So if you took a diagonal from one side and then from the other corner put in another diagonal at right angles to it, you'll end up with that spot, and that spot's called the eye. Now this is a root phi or 1.618 or cube root then, okay, whatever.
No, it is a square root.
It is a square root?
Yeah, I missed the second digit.
Okay.
1, 2, 7.
Yeah.
7.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Damn, I've been calling that the wrong thing all this time. Anyway, so this, the relationship between the two sides, the long side and the short side, is the root 1.618 or 272. And what's unique then about that rectangle is that at the eye, that point there, that's fuzzed out a little bit, is at the gold section relationship from each side and the diagonal. You see that again in another one of those. How do I go back now? Press the wrong button here. Is there a way to get me out of this?
X.
Click the other tab on the taskbar.
Oh, is that it? There we go. Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I don't see why that horizontal line is at that location, not just a bit higher, following more the line of scenery.
Well, that's a good question. there's a very... There we go. See that there's a little boat there, and it becomes, because it's totally isolated, becomes a very strong focal point. And so the line tends to run from here to the join, which is the important point of here, across that boat. So it becomes forward rather than following a strict linear element with the actual islands there. So there's another view of the same thing. You can take that and you can see how, again, you can take what happens here is the tallest tree and a line between that. The distance between here and here is the same as from here to here. So you've got a square. And then you've got another square in here that joins up with the edge, that almost that cut edge of the trees there in the foreground. And it's emphasized slightly by this patch either side of the slide doesn't tell it so much, but a patch of lighter green and this light yellow grass in the foreground. So you've got a number of relating rectangles and squares, and you can keep going on with the picture with more of those things, but then it gets a little bit too complex. Yes.
This analysis with vertical and horizontal line segments that you're doing,
yes.
Is that what you're bringing to this as a viewer, or do you know that this is what an artist is?
That's what I'm bringing as a viewer. It seems to me, it's a good question, because there's a lot of contention that if the artist didn't say this is what I'm doing, then how can you be sure that that's what he's doing?
Well, it doesn't matter, but did he?
No. And in fact, he virtually denies it. But I'm talking with his 97-year-old now wife. He's dead, but his wife's still alive. She indicated he was a very mischievous guy and would tend to do things and say things that would not be quite true, even. For example, when being inducted into the army in the war years, he had to take an aptitude test. And he purposely got all of the art questions wrong and all of the science questions right, so he was well educated. So that's, I think the same thing. You can't surat doesn't write anywhere that he used any kind of measurement systems. So a lot of people say, well, so you can't be sure he did then. But it wouldn't be very interesting, would it, to talk about it, if he said, that's what I do. Okay, it's a done deal. So I always find it's much more interesting to talk about artists where you have to try to find things about their work as an audience or a viewer. So we've got here, there's the artist in the background in his studio. This is his daughter, Lizzie, or Elizabeth, posing for him in front of a mirror, which is positioned, by the way, directly on. It's got a horizontal line, so it must be exactly in front of you. So actually, the reflection of Lizzie here is impossible. So immediately, you know, the artist obviously has to make some adjustments with his work to create certain things like that. So how is everything positioned in here? The primary things, of course, is the girl, his daughter, and she is positioned exactly at the face and the bottom of the mirror are exactly at the Fibonacci divisions of space of the sides. The mirror is a perfect square, and within that, the other thinner line is also at the Fibonacci distance from the sides. And another version of the same thing gives you more of those things. What he's also done is he's the inside edge of the mirror here, just visible, he's measuring things from that rather from the edge of the canvas. So it gives you a more perfect version of the whole thing in terms of the numbering systems, if you like. So you can see all of these things are either square or a root. Golden section rectangle or a golden section rectangle. For example, this window in the back of the studio looks out onto the neighbor's house is a golden section rectangle. I'm not sure why I'm missing pieces up here. Maybe it's anyway, so what it says, of course, is that you can apply a root golden section rectangle in a canvas of any proportion. So in this case, then, with a canvas size of 100, it would be 78.6, 61.8, and so on, squishing and rounding off, where every second number is the golden ratio. Also, artists would transpose the short side measures onto the long side, and that's known as rebatment. So it's basically taking the short side and then folding it over onto the long side, so we end up with a square, and you can use then the measures within that side to orchestrate the space.
Back there, what did you call this process of folding over?
Rebatment.
This is a common thing?
Yes.
Now describe it again.
All you're doing is making a square within the rectangle. So essentially, if you've got a...
Any rectangle.
Yeah, any rectangle. So for example, okay, it's a rectangle. If I fold this over to become within it a square, or at least I'll fold this piece over so I end up with a square within it, say, then I'm using the lines within that.
So,
and that's a very common practice in any painting. It's one of the simplest ways to get some sense of order.
We call that rebatment?
Rebatment. R-E-B-A-T. Some use an E in there, M-E-N-T.
So there's no concern about the leftover rectangle having the same proportions as the original?
Not in that case, no. And some people use it in various ways to so the space is not so obvious. In a small rectangle, in a square or rectangle, or even in a long one. And of course that follows from the use of the golden section rectangle, where if you take a rebatment square, if you want, out of it, what you do end up with, of course, then is a rectangle that's left. There's also a golden section rectangle, so that's the one that's got more self-similar measures. But most artists, contemporary artists, I believe, find that the golden section rectangle is too long for contemporary taste. The studies that have been done measuring well-known artists' canvas shapes have found that if they tend to average out more like about 1.35 rectangles rather than 1.618. So it's rare that they go that way. You have to go back to the Renaissance to find rectangles that that long, if you want. This one is another root golden section rectangle, where again, here, this is his wife, Anne, the poet, the 97-year-old now, lady who was then ill with hepatitis during the summer. It's called July Interior. She has been in bed for a month, and they're not going off to their usual sojourn on the island this summer because of her illness. You can see that it's a pretty low angle of view. It's almost like he's sitting at her bedside. And of course, her face is the most important thing in the canvas. So that's placed at what they call the eye of the rectangle and described by the diagonal and another diagonal of right angles to it. That then gives you, and again unique to this rectangle, all of the self-similar measures, so that this relationship from the edge is the golden section relationship. This is 70 here. We've got from her face to the corner a 113, which is echoed with the horizontal to this edge, which is also at the golden section relationship from there. And so we've got this line, which actually ends up, if you draw the perspective lines, so take a line from the window and follow it back, you'll end up here. So it also relates to that, and a lot of artists also use that system, following the perspective vanishing point as one of the dividing elements. I'll have a few slides of that in a minute. You can see that orders most of the things in here. Not perfectly, it's not like everything's lined up. If it was, it would look, you'd know. And so it wouldn't look right. But it does line up many of the important areas in here. This dark line here, which, if you like, reinforces this vertical down to her face, is also pretty important. That line and this line is the edges of a four-poster bed, although I only know that because you can't tell it from the picture, because he's painted other paintings of the same bed. Where you can see those things. And little things like this thing out, it looks like a telephone wire from the old-fashioned telephone there. But it wouldn't have a right-angle bend in it. So there's little things like that, I have no idea what they are. It might be a chair outside the window or anything. And so what he does is some things he paints very realistically, and other things that are just treated rather abstractly, like this folio. It's not painted like this book is. It's much more abstract. And that's the color picture of that. And then a few other artists that you'd be familiar with who have been well documented to have used these systems. This is Leonardo da Vinci, of course, and The Last Supper. Probably repopularized by Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, which of course also talks about Fibonacci series. And Seurat. So these lines that now, so we have a strong line there on the horizon. Primary figure, a primary vertical, is right at the Fibonacci number distances from the edges. And you can keep going with that. Some people even try to ascribe those rectangles around figures. But I think it's sufficient to just show that the primary areas are there. This is a J.M.W. Turner, who uses the same proportioning system for his horizon line plus the sunset, which is the very strong feature in that painting right there. And this is Claude Lorrain, and you can see the original, pressing the wrong button here. In the original picture, where everyone's facing out, looking out, all the perspective lines run down to this point, and you can see the perspective lines here, which also echo then to our one-point perspective, echo the division of space, which again is at the golden section ratios from the edges. And Vermeer, also well documented, to use Fibonacci numbers as a measuring device. And of course, in this period, instead of knocking out numbers on a calculator based on the measurement of edges, that was usually done by a system of diagonals. So here, his arm is resting on the division of space. The model is within that area. The edge of the map on the wall is clearly defining that space. And here's a Vuillard. So it's an unusual composition because the woman sweeping, his mother, is right on the right-hand edge. But she's so decorative in this highly patterned format that it is not really a strong focal point. She's just there. But having said that, you can see that the angle of the broom leads up to the top and then across the back down to, this is the midline, as you can see from the diagonals. And then the golden section ratio here, and then this line, which is not that important, just came out bigger for some reason. But that defines the division of space again, so dividing this line or this area up in the same way defines how her head is cropped into that picture.
I have a question.
Sure.
Are you last year, were these your analyses, or are they...
They're mine.
Martin Kemp, or...
The last few are mine.
Okay. So, Martin Kemp came on this sort of thing. The science of archive.
I'm not familiar with that, but no, I'm certainly read most treatises on it. Charles Boulow is, if you like, the major tech to the painter's secret geometry. He's done a lot of analyses of historical artworks, but I haven't seen any of these specific pictures done that way. So I'm just using that system. So this is another Vermeer. And this is, again, my analysis. So we've got a very strong vertical here, which is at the Fibonacci numbers from the right. Also a diagonal through that leads us down. There's two figures in here, one there and one there. And so they're defined by some of the diagonals in the picture. And this is, again, another division of the same space, or at least from there to there, divided again by 1.618. And then these are my pieces. So you can be assured that there was some systemization of the proportioning of these things. And I'm working a lot with very shallow space. So you can see, and I've only put some of the primary two, or vertical, horizontal there. And again, anytime you have a figure in a picture, you end up with a narrative. So you say, well, who is that? What are they doing? So they always become the focal point, whatever else you do. Even if they're not particularly detailed, like that figure. But that's the primary vertical, following through to the boat engine. And of course, the dock is a perfect horizontal.
Chris, when you laid out your canvas,
mm-hmm.
Did you have all with an afternoon?
Yes. I measure the size and then divide by 1.618 or sometimes 1.272 and then try to formulate other things so that they relate to that. So like on this one, so I get the diagonal of the boat fitting into that and then certain intervals between the tables so you can work with all those things. So it's not very clear on this slide, but obviously that's the strongest vertical with the lamp, and that's the strongest horizontal, and those are at those proportions. And because I've been doing a lot of painting from exotic landscapes, I was doing a lot of things with more organic material, like trees on islands and so on, with the water in front. I started thinking of them sort of as picture postcards, so I started adding stamps and other things in there. So this one you can see also, there's a stamp, and we're coming down, and that's a division of space, and then that's a more complex version of the same thing. So that's how it gets divided up. And then, because of the picture postcard thing, I started adding some, those Victorian postcards you can buy where someone's writing with an old pen. And I sort of copied some of the writing into the piece and began stamps. And you know, this is more of a combination of locations. This is an English harbor architecture at the top, and then the boats are from Greece. And that's how that was orchestrated. So some diagonals, diagonals, if there's not that many in a picture, can be very strong. So they need to be organized in some fashion. So that one coming down again to the golden section point there, these two are parallel, end up with the other golden section point there, and so on.
Excuse me. Do you sketch the grid of all the proportions before you start painting? Or does it come by intuition that you paint what you see, design the picture, and then you analyze yourself?
Well, normally I start off with subject matter. It's chicken and egg composition, actually. You start off with subject matter, then organize it, or you start off with a grid and then paint into it. But because I'm working with fairly realistic subject matter, I need to have some reference to that rather than make it up. So normally I'm changing things to fit the grid, so like that. So if you look at this, not all the buildings make sense. So I'm changing that in this case. And other ones I can move things around, you know, to formulate a better fit, if you want. Yep.
Why do you change things? Because you think they look better, or they
yes.
Need more attention?
Well, I'm instead of just sort of taking a photograph and painting it, mm-hmm. right? I'm trying to give the piece that sense of order and a relationship with the parts of the whole that I started out with in talking about what design is, what composition is, or can be. So the picture shouldn't just be a mirror of reality. Otherwise, why are you doing it? What's the point? You know, certainly, if that's a photograph, it might be. But contemporary photographers have other means to change things with lighting and what have you. Of course, now Photoshop. So this is one looking out over the roofs in Istanbul. And so you can see here that all the same things. The horizon line is a division of space between here on the 1.618 ratio. This is a strong vertical. Similarly, that secondary vertical is placed at the same distance from the other side, and so on. And lastly, this is a view from one of the piers in Santorini, looking down onto the harbor, with a sun-washed wall and a table and a metal chair. And this was organized this way. So with the primary division of space here. So what we're doing here, because lots of diagonals, is working from the edges. So this area here is the 1.618 from the top and bottom. It's a square canvas. We end up with a similar proportion on the other side. So this actually hits this side at the halfway. And then all of these other measures are equidistant from each other. So we can get a lot of similar things happening there, or areas in which to put something which seem to make some sort of sense. That's it, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bartlett. Questions?
Yes, I'm wondering if anybody has analyzed some of the historical paintings, but applying the lines in a slightly different place that leads to almost the same results, but slightly different. And that is one of the things landscape photographers are taught, is divide the horizontal line into thirds and divide the vertical into thirds. And then the one of the four intersections is where your primary focal point is, which is only about 10 or 15% off from the golden ratio.
That rule of thirds, it's called, is often quoted in photography. Well, of course, in photography, you can't move stuff. So if I'm looking at, you know, so that table there, if I didn't like it where it is, I can move it to the right or left.
But you move your lens.
So you can move the lens and take a different positioning. The issue with that a number of people have with the rule of thirds is it's very easy to see that it is a third. You can immediately go, oh, that's a third. Whereas a more subtle relationship, such as the Fibonacci division of space, you can sense it, but it attracts you, but it's not like that evident. So it's a subtle difference. So you can see the relationship between things, but you go, let me look at that again, rather than just sensing it immediately. So if you divide it up into quarters or fifths or thirds, or most people can, oh, got that. So that's the difference.
Yeah. When you say that the Vermeer is well documented, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that there are...
In books on composition, it's analyzed...
Who documented it at what time? Were these 19th century documentations?
Yes.
There's nothing from the 17th century?
No.
That, and there's nothing in the 17th century literature that Fibonacci series was used for the composition of pictures, so that even though you didn't have it from Vermeer, you had it from Steen or something like that. There's no tradition of this in the from the time period. Is that true?
There is a tradition of orchestration of the paintings, but there's not, to my knowledge, any direct written evidence that Vermeer or Steen or any other Flemish artist used that particularly.
So when you say well documented,
I'm talking documented in terms of contemporary analysis.
Well, it was probably a closely held thing, like cameras, mirrors, but your paintings. You're under Cana, you have these line?
Yes. I mean, I'm
like chalk lines?
Pencil. So I draw everything out in pencil first. And then treat it like a painting by numbers kit. And between the lines. That's a better.
If you use a chalk line, you don't have to draw any lines. But the other thing I'd be interested in seeing you do is. Her looking at this end of the room. So if you stand here somewhere, give us an analysis right now.
I'm sorry, sir.
Just stand back away so you see the front of the room where we're seeing it.
Yes.
Give us an analysis, you know, like how you would analyze the front of the room. In other words, there are all these verticals, these horizontals.
Oh.
You're going to now analyze it like it's a...
Yeah, but...
To give us some idea.
The difference would be is the front of the room has essentially doesn't have any intended focal points or linear lineups necessarily. I mean, you can talk about, okay, well, the panels on the architect obviously designed those shapes with a pattern in mind. And you can try to find other ones that way. But it's sort of like you're now saying, okay, take a photograph of something and analyze it. But there'd be a lot of, you might find some things in it by accident, but the point would be there's no intention.
But as you pointed out with the photograph, you can move around. You think your intention.
Well, you can to some degree, but I can make it exact.
I'm trying to figure out how you're...
Oh,
so move around.
You're never going to get there.
Might I suggest that tending to put the focus on the whiteboard with the lines that he's in?
Well, that would seem to be central, and you're right. So certainly that's what you're looking at, is the images on the screen. So that's the center point.
Specifically the whiteboard, the way the horizontal lines are running at sort of where people would be writing.
Yeah, well, you use some ergonomics for that, right? People sit and so on.
Well, you're doing two things. You started out by doing analysis.
Yes.
And then you ended up by doing a composition using the same idea.
Yes.
So,
three more short questions, please.
I wanted to, if this fee-golden ratio is a sort of a force of nature that we've inherited somehow, is there any talk of looking for what's behind that, the same way that light falls off is the square of the distance, and as a result, blah, blah, blah. Is there something at work behind this that has made this so successful, popular, recurring?
I think most would say that it's because you can see some of those relationships in nature. Some people quote phyllotaxis, the way leaves are arranged on farms, for the spiral formats. So, for example, the sunflower is one of the best examples, where you have two spirals of seeds running in two directions. And on large sunflowers, you can count the seeds, and they'll come out to be 34 or 55, with the Fibonacci numbers next to each other. So, and the same sort of thing can happen in pine cones and a number of other things. So,
ratio of pine cones?
Yes, that's a harder one to prove, because everyone's a little bit different. So, in general, yeah. Well, and Leonardo's Vitruvian map is constantly analyzed as having the golden ratio.
One question.
Yes. I was just wondering if you tried other things, that's all. Like if you could do a bunch of pictures that were in one point perspective and then a two point perspective, and then kind of settle on this is the thing that expresses your interest the best, or did you just start with something like that?
No, as you can see, I mean, I tend to use things where I can patternize it, because that's what I'm interested in. So like even this, which is deep space, if you like, but it's from a direct on view, so it's not, it doesn't require two or three point perspectives.
I was wondering if you tried those earlier on.
Yes.
Just try them on and say, okay, well, this is the one that is more complex.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I used to do things more like the Claude Lorrain type paintings, if you want, with deep space like that.
I also noticed a lot of your sketches, man-made objects, which also have their own characters, like boats and characters and things that have structure in those structures.
Yes.
So I think we should close this discussion and continue into the break. Thank you very much, Bartlett.